Well, hello there from a Blanket Fort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood. This is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and welcome back to the show. Today on the show, we are going to be talking about sane washing, willful ignorance, and the banality of evil. But before we talk about any of that, I want to talk about certainty. We are here today with our live TikTok digital studio audience. We got about 130 people in the studio audience. Welcome everyone out there. Welcome to all of you wherever you are in time and space. I was watching the movie Conclave recently. Great movie, by the way. It's been nominated for a bunch of awards. I didn't see it while it was in the theaters. It just never really grabbed me. The trailers never really jumped out. I just was like, I don't really want to watch a bunch of like priests debate over who's the new pope. That doesn't seem like an interesting movie. That seems like the complete polar opposite of an interesting movie. That just seems like the most boring thing I can possibly imagine watching. It doesn't matter how many twists and turns you put into it. It's still a bunch of Catholic priests debating over who should be pope. I don't care. And then it got all of this, you know, good buzz. And I heard a couple things about it. And I was like, you know, I really like Ralph Fiennes. He's like one of my favorite actors. Watched it, loved it. Turns out, great flick. And he gives this homily at one point in that movie where he talks about, he kind of admonishes his fellow cardinals, his fellow eminentiae, and he, you know, asks them to be wary of the sin of certainty. You're basically saying our faith is based on the principle of doubt, that we cannot have faith without doubt. We can't afford to be certain about things in this world. And I do think that there's a lot of truth to that. So few things in this world are actually certain. You know, kind of the only things that you can really count on in this life are impermanence and change and entropy. The ever-moving march of time, the forward progress of time, the fact that you are going to die just as you were born. And everything else is kind of uncertain, even things that feel rock solid. There might be a time in your life where you get a job and you think, this is it. I finally found the career that I was always meant to be doing. This is me living in my purpose. This is me completely fulfilled. I feel like I know where I belong now. I understand myself better because of this job. And they can lay you off 1 week out of the blue. And you'd be completely blindsided by it. You can have a relationship like that. You know, going through your whole life dating, doing the dating app shuffle, getting set up by friends, having relationships fall apart. And finally, one day you meet a person and you think, I never knew it could be like this. This is what people are talking about. This is what all those songs are about. This is what those movies are about. And every bone in your body knows it. Every ounce of your being understands it and is convinced of it and is certain that you have met your soulmate, that this is your one true love, that this is the person that you are meant to spend the rest of your days with, and that person dies in a car accident after you've been together for a year. This happens to people all the time. I know this is really bleak. The subject matter for this episode is bleak. Strap in. Let me just be upfront with you about that. It's not going to get much lighter or much happier. I'm just talking about certainty and how nothing is truly certain. Even things that you feel certain about, your faith. You believe that your faith is a guiding principle in your life, that it's a bedrock of your personality, of who you are, that your beliefs on who God is and what God is and the nature of God and the mind of God define who you are and give a guiding, directing credo to your personal moral and ethical philosophy. All of that can come crashing down with a little too much investigation, with a little too much looking in the mirror and actually thinking about what it is that you really believe. Someone that you really respect high in the organization that you might belong to might do something or say something that crumbles your faith and makes you realize that it is being guided by people who cannot be trusted. All of that is up for grabs. You might be on a medication that you think you could swear this medication that you found is the reason why you're feeling better. You could swear that everything else you've tried in your life has not touched the symptoms that you've been experiencing your entire life, but this medication is that saving balm, only to find out that the medication has been causing life-threatening side effects for months, years, and now you've got to deal with that. My point is, again, I understand bleak subject matter. I apologize, but we are in bleak times. You can't be certain about much in this life. I want to tell you something that I am certain of today. I want to be absolutely clear about it. I do not want to mince words. Elon Musk did a Sieg Heil salute on the stage at the presidential inauguration on Monday, January 20th, 2025, from behind the presidential pulpit. That happened. We saw it with our eyes. It was real. He did it twice. It was entirely unambiguous. There is no room for debate on this. There is no room for speculation or for other perspectives on this or for maybe it was something else. It was what it was. I am absolutely certain of that. You should be too. Anyone that tells you that you cannot be certain of it, anyone that tries to make you think that your certainty is a character flaw, anyone that tries to make you think that maybe you're not seeing it correctly or maybe you've been misled by your ideology, is not a safe person. That person has been compromised. That person is either lying to themselves or to you. That is what is true right now. That is the reality of our situation. That is what I'm certain of. That Sieg Heil salute was a declaration. It was a before and after moment. It was a monumental, historic moment in all of the worst ways imaginable. And it's also not something that was unprecedented. It's not something that just came out of the blue. It's not the first time Elon Musk has done white supremacist hand gestures on national television. He did it when he was on Saturday Night Live. It was just a little more subtle, but he did the okay white power hand gesture while he was on Weekend Update. At the time, I think it was easier for people to hand wave it away, but looking back at it now, it's incredibly clear what he was doing and what he has been doing this whole time. Elon Musk has been publicly a Nazi for some time now. Elon Musk bought Twitter, renamed it to X, and promptly unbanned hundreds of white nationalist and neo-Nazi accounts. In the days and weeks that followed Elon Musk purchasing Twitter, there was a massive rise in hate speech on the app. He talked about the need for restoring free speech, but he was highly censoring leftist accounts and liberal accounts while promoting far right-wing authoritarian and Nazi hate speech. And he's been doing this, retweeting Nazis, agreeing with white supremacists for some time now. People have been sounding the alarm about this and pointing to it for some time now. People have been pointing to the similarities between Donald Trump and his politics and the politics of the Third Reich and the far right authoritarian politics of 1930s Germany. People have been drawing those parallels, including J.D. Vance. J.D. Vance called Donald Trump America's Hitler before he became Donald Trump's running mate for the 2024 election. This is not new. This is not something that just came out of the blue. This is not just something that liberals and Democrats are doing as a smear campaign against the new administration. This is something that has been in the public eye for years now. And what happened on Monday was the final mask-off announcement that, yes, everything you have been warned about is actually happening. You need look no further than at the myriad of executive orders that have been signed into action by the new president, Donald Trump, in his first 48 hours in office. We're no longer at a place where people are talking about Project 2025 as this like hypothetical potential future that we're trying to stave off with our votes. We are here in a reality where in a few years, the America that you grew up knowing, the America that you grew up in, if you're a citizen of the country, will no longer exist in the same way. It hasn't for a while. For a while now, Donald Trump changed the game. He changed the political landscape in America. He changed what it means to be ideologically divided. He changed the game. He so heavily weighted the far-right authoritarian side of the Republican Party and the conservative hive mind that he fundamentally changed what it means to be left or right in America. He just changed the entire landscape of it, but this is really the culmination of it. We are now living in it. It's no longer just like the threat of it, it's here. And we need to get on the same page about that, and we need to get real about that. So what do we do with that certainty? What do we do with that level of certainty that this is where we are, this is what's happening, this is what's taking place? Again, I know it's bleak, I know it's scary, let's talk about it. That's what I'm here to do for as long as I can, is talk about it. I want to start off by talking about the inherent goodness of people. Someone in the comments says that he penned a bill that said, and this is true, that gender starts at conception, which means that everyone is female because everybody starts out biologically, anatomically female, and then in utero, you either evolve into an anatomical male or you do not. So yeah, it just, you know, he also, yeah, he did that. One of the first things that he said was that he was going to make an executive order that says that there are only two genders, which is just basically saying, I'm going to make an executive order that says that the entire history of anthropology and human biology, we can throw that out. That everything that, biology students and anthropology students are taught in intro biology courses, we were going to throw that out. Just the entire science that is known by, biologists and anthropologists around the entire world. It's the United States official policy that that is junk science and that it's not true and that everyone's female, apparently, because he's an idiot and they're all idiots. But let's talk about the inherent goodness of people. So I was talking with a friend today who said, you know, I truly believe that if you dropped your wallet on the street, 9 out of 10 people would pick that up and try to find you. They would figure out some way to figure out where you are and get your wallet with all of your money back to you. And I want to say I generally agree with that. It's a little more optimistic than what I think I would actually realistically say. I'd say it's more like 7 out of 10, maybe 8 out of 10. But I want to say in general that most of the people that I know, most of the people that you know, most of the people in the world are capable of really casual, basic decency and good. That fundamentally at the end of the day, at the bottom of the barrel, what everyone really wants is just to make sure that they are taken care of and the people they care about are taken care of. And most people can understand that that's what the other people around them want as well. There's sort of a common sense of decency amongst all of us when it comes to really basic things. I moved to New York in 2015, and in the first year that I was there, I left my wallet on a bus one day, and I couldn't believe it. I mean, I was so devastated already. I'd been there for like 3 months. I'd been living in the city for like 3 months, and I was already devastated because the city was just so hard. It was just so much harder than I thought it was going to be, and I was going through a breakup, and I had no money, and then I left my wallet on this bus, and it felt just like the last straw. It just felt like my whole life was unraveling. And somebody picked my wallet up, gave it to the bus driver, and the bus driver left it with the lost and found at the Port Authority. And they called me on the phone and they said, we have your wallet down here. And I was able to go down to the Port Authority and get my wallet back. New York City, 10 million people. And I left my wallet on a bus and somebody made sure it got back to me safe. I believe in this. I believe in this general principle. Here's the thing. It's not a zero-sum game. It's not an all-or-nothing thing when we talk about the inherent goodness of people, because I do believe that there is an inherent goodness, a capability for good that exists in all people. I think that all people are capable of good acts. I think that all people, even the worst people that you can imagine, have done acts of kindness in their lives before, have done things that were really kind of remarkably selfless and kind and generous and charitable and serviceable. I think that this is common. The other part of that, though, is that all of these people, everyone you know, even the best person that you know, is capable of really casual cruelty and evil and hatred and bigotry. It's just, it is just the nature of being human. It goes back to that monologue from that movie. Like, the problem with certainty is that you need doubt to have faith. You need the good to have the bad. You need the bad to have the good. We all carry both of that in us. We can do it. Like, I can be on my way to volunteer at a volunteer center to help people who were affected in the Los Angeles wildfires. And on my way, I can get mad at someone in traffic and say something about that person in that other car that's like unthinkably cruel, where I'm just like, you fucking piece of fucking shit. I hope you fucking die. I hope you crash your car and die, you piece of shit. Like, I can be so angry and so mad at a complete stranger at the drop of a hat, at the flip of a switch, while I'm on my way to help strangers and to try to do kindness. Both of those things can exist in the same instance. So I do think that, you know, some philosophers would say you got to be a glass half full or a glass half empty kind of person. Which one do you care to look at? Do you want to highlight and look at and lean into the inherent goodness of people? Or do you want to highlight and look at and lean into the inherent capability for cruelty and malice and hate and evil of all people? And I'm sort of a philosophical realist who thinks you have to be willing to look at both. And this is kind of the problem, I think, of being a political leftist, of being a philosophical realist, of being a person who is trying to be honest about the state of the world and honest about things that are going on in the world, trying to give an honest assessment of what's happening with when it comes to society and social equality and social persecution and things like climate change and how we're doing at taking care of our planet and taking care of each other. The problem is that, like, it's full of inconvenient and uncomfortable truths. It's full of things that are not fun to know. It's just full of stuff where you're like, well, that sucks. Like, to a certain extent, it sucks to be a person who understands that there are more chromosomal makeups than XX or XY. Because when you're a person whose worldview is as simple as A or B, it's just simpler. Like, everything just seems so much clearer. They look at us and they go, what are you talking? It's one or the other. It's XX or XY. It's zero or one. What are you talking about? You guys are making a bunch of stuff up. And they don't know basic biological reality. They don't know that at the fundamental level of the building blocks of human beings, we have multiple orientations that we can come in. Any binary marker that you try to make when it comes to sex and gender, and obviously sex and gender are two different things. Gender is the socially constructed concept that we sort of lay on top of these sex characteristics. But any marker that you try to look at as a scientific signifier of a fundamental binary, it just is not there. Anatomical makeup, if you try to look at that as a signifier of a fundamental binary, people come in more than two anatomical makeups. You think that it's either penis or vagina. It's not. That made me think of that song from Amelia Perez, penis to vagina. but it's not. It's more. And there's people who are intersex. There's people with a penis who have a uterus and all different kinds of combinations. Those people exist. Those people are real. And that should be a completely uncontroversial thing to be aware of. That shouldn't be an uncomfortable or inconvenient thing to be aware of. It's uncomfortable and inconvenient because of the existence of ignorant bigots. Because we know that, like, people are trying to wipe those people out of existence for no reason. They just have a fundamental hatred of things that they don't understand, that is completely illogical and irrational. And I think it maybe is just because it makes the world more complex than they want the world to be. They just want the world to be simpler. They want the world to fit into a neater, more comfortable box that they can more easily define. They want it to be they want to excuse themselves from the work of having to understand and grapple with a complex reality, is basically what it is. And when you're trying to grapple with the reality of a complex world and the complexities of life, there's a lot of information that can be kind of uncomfortable or inconvenient to know. And it's not always so easy to just always be a glass half full person. Because when you are aware of the reality of climate change and what humans have done to this planet and what that means for future generations and what that means for us alive right now, when you're aware of the horrors of late stage capitalism, when you're aware of all of the injustices going on around all of the world, and you're trying to take an account of all of these things and take an account of your own culpability in these things and how your actions play into these things, it's not always easy to just be a happy-go-lucky, glass-half-full, optimistic, everyone's going to give my wallet back kind of person. Sometimes cynicism's going to sneak in there, but I wouldn't even call it cynicism. I would just call it realism. I would just call it being a philosophical realist and trying to be honest about the fact that both things exist, that you can witness amazing acts of kindness and charity and love and experience love and experience joy, and you can also witness incredible acts of ignorance and hate and stupidity and bigotry and evil, and see both of those things and acknowledge the reality of both of those things and grapple with how you're going to respond to both of those things. If everyone has inherent goodness in them, why do good people support bad things? I'm going to break this down in order of the most excusable reasons, the most understandable and most kind of empathetic reasons to the most dangerous reasons. The people who are the most dangerous, the people that you most need to watch out for. So the first thing that we're going to talk about, the first kind of person that we're going to talk about are people who are sane washing when they excuse or allow bad things to happen. I've made a couple short form videos about this, but sane washing is this psychological self-preservation tactic that people engage in when they're witnessing something that's completely insane, something that defies all rational explanation or logical explanation in their brain. It's similar to what happens when an abuse victim experiences their partner telling them, if you ever leave me, I'm going to kill you. They think, there's no way that they just said that. This is a person who I fell in love with. This is a person who I've experienced some of the highest moments of joy in my life with. There's no way that the closest person to me in my life, the person that I have the most established intimacy with in my life, just said that to me. And so your brain starts to rewrite the narrative and reestablish what they said, the words they actually said, into something more palatable, something that is easier to digest and to understand and to believe, to be honest. It feels like a survival mechanism, even though it's kind of the opposite of that. But it's a way, the reason why this is, you know, kind of the most benign or excusable or understandable reason why good people do bad things is because these people are just trying to make sense of a world that often is very crazy and doesn't make a lot of sense. There's not a lot of inherent logic to what the ruling class is doing when it comes to late-stage capitalism, when it comes to emboldening the reinvigoration, the rejuvenation of Nazism. Like, Forrest Balkai said on Threads the other day, like, Nazis are so stupid. Why would you be a person who always talks about free speech and the right to be able to, you know, not be canceled by liberals, to uphold an ideology that is going to censor your speech and that is going to kill you if you dissent? Like, you're using a system that allows you to dissent. You're using a system that allows you to freely protest, to advocate for a system that will not allow you to dissent, that will not allow you to freely protest. You're not thinking it through. It doesn't make sense. And so what you're doing when you sane wash is you're trying to rewrite something that doesn't make sense into something that does make sense. Because it doesn't, like, there's no reason why the richest man in the world, who just helped the president get elected in 2025, should be a Nazi. There's no logical, rational reason for him to be a Nazi. So people rewrite it to be something else. They're just like, well, that doesn't make any sense. Why would Elon Musk, it actually does make sense if you think about it. Why would Elon Musk, the child of wealthy white emerald miners from apartheid South Africa, grow up to be a Nazi? It actually makes sense if you just consider the man's history for even a second. But I think that the logic of adopting a personal philosophy and ideology as toxic as being a full-blown Nazi in the 21st century is kind of hard to wrap your brain around, because all of the media that we've consumed from the time we were kids as Americans is Nazis bad. The Nazis are the bad guys. Why would you want to be one of the bad guys? They're the biggest bad guys in history. They're the worst bad guys we know. Why would you want to be part of the worst bad guys we know? So it doesn't make sense to people that this could be a thriving ideology in a world where all of the messaging that we all received growing up was, you shouldn't be that. So you might have friends and family members who are doing this right now, who are trying to sane wash away what we all saw, because it doesn't make sense. It's not a logical thing. It's not a sane thing to witness. And it's not. It's an insane thing. It's an understandable thing that they're doing. It still is dangerous because these people are, I mean, like, let's go back to the abuse victim. It's understandable why that person wants to sane wash the words of their abuser. It's understandable why they would not want to believe that that person could actually pose a threat to their physical well-being. It completely makes sense why they would rewrite the narrative to make themselves feel safer. And still, it is the tactic that is going to result in putting them in the most possible danger. Like, being a realist about what's happening in that situation when your partner says, if you ever leave me, I'll kill you. Being a realist in that situation means accepting a very uncomfortable, inconvenient truth. It means sitting with the fact that a person that you decided to give all of your trust to, your entire heart to, all of your intimacy to, actually turned out to be the most dangerous person for you to be around. It's a very heartbreaking and kind of earth-shattering realization to come to. It's a profoundly difficult thing to come to terms with, and yet you have to come to terms with it in order to ensure your own safety. And that's sort of the tug of war at play here. So even though these people can be excused, they're like, you can understand where they're coming from, it's still dangerous. Let's move on to willful ignorance. This is the next group of people that excuse and allow and promote and proliferate bad people. And this is maybe my least favorite group. I just have such low tolerance for people who have the ability to not be as dumb as they are, and they just won't do it. Like, people who have all of the same access that I have. Look, I'm not that smart of a guy. I really am not. I didn't get great grades in school. I had a terrible GPA by the time I left college. I couldn't even get a bachelor's degree in musical theater. I'm not a terribly smart guy, but I know how to avail myself to information and how to, like, trust people the right people with the right kind of studies. I know. I mean, even listen to me trying to talk about it now, I'm just like, I can yap, I can talk well, I'm a good writer, I'm a good actor, I'm a good artist, I do the things that I do well, but I'm not a terribly smart person, and that's why it's really hard for me to see people who I know have the ability to be much smarter than me, people who are better with money than me, people who are more business savvy, people who are better in relationships than me, who can keep a relationship together for longer than I am, people who know more about what it takes to build a family unit. To see people like that, who I should be able to have a lot of respect for their intelligence, to see them be willfully ignorant. To see those people, I have friends who make so much more money than I will ever make in my life, who when they talk to me about economics, I realize, wow, this guy actually knows so much more about how the economy functions and about money than I ever will know, who are pretending right now that they don't know what a Sieg Heil salute looks like. And I just refuse to believe that they're actually that stupid, that they actually don't know what it looks like. And all I'm left to believe is that they are either lying to me, they do know what it is, and then that would put them in one of the other categories that we're going to get to in just a little bit, or they are willfully deluding themselves. They are control-alt-deleting their own knowledge of these things to make it so that they can feign ignorance and just say, it looked like he was throwing his heart out to the audience. I saw this video from Jeff Mead. Oh God, we hate Jeff Mead. Jeff Mead sucks. I have my own sordid history with Jeff Mead. You can watch a video about that on my channel. I'll link it in the description. But Jeff Mead, of course, has been posting videos about how it's just so gross and so low what liberals are doing, trying to twist this heartfelt gesture into something that it's not, trying to push this propaganda. Jeff Mead's such a bad guy. He's such a terrible person. But he insists that the full context of the video really shows us what happened. That you can see that he puts his hand on his heart, and then he throws his heart out to the crowd, and he even says, "My heart goes out to you." He literally says that. I mean, how could the left be so evil as to misconstrue this? Because I'm a glutton for punishment, and because I guess I really like to rile myself up, I took a stroll through Jeff's comments on that video. It's got hundreds of thousands of likes, and it's doing very well for him. And the comments are just full of people going, "He was throwing his heart out to the crowd. It was so beautiful. He was throwing his heart out." People's excuses have ranged from, it's a Roman salute, not better. Roman salute is still a fascist salute. The Roman salute is what the Nazi salute was based on. That's where the Sieg Heil came from. It was based on the fascist salute of the Roman Empire. They say it was an autistic stim, that it's just, he was stimming. He's autistic and he stims that way. Don't do that to autistic people. Don't throw autistic people under the bus. Don't do what Roseanne did and say that Ambien makes you racist. That's not a side effect of Ambien. You don't take Ambien and then just start throwing out racial slurs. If you're autistic and you're stimming, you don't just Heil Hitler all the time when you're on stage at the inauguration behind the presidential pulpit. Don't do that. Don't, you know, but people want smart people. Otherwise intelligent people are making themselves appear as though they have the intelligence of a person who has been hammering themselves in the head with a hammer for several years in a row. Like, it's just, it's like you can have a conversation with one of these people about any other topic and they'll be a remarkably enlightened, well-read, well-studied individual, well-spoken individual, articulate. And then you get to this topic and they're like, it's just because the guy was autistic and he was throwing his heart out and it was just kind of awkward. And they make themselves infantile and so impossibly stupid. They willfully delude their own intelligence so that they can prop up this terrible, terrifying behavior. And so these are the next most dangerous kind of people, these willfully ignorant people, these people who pretend not to understand, you know, climate science, people who say, well, if the climate is getting hotter, if the globe is getting hotter, then how come snow? How come snow in Texas? And they pretend to be third graders. They pretend, like, climate scientists can explain this quite easily and quite plainly. They can explain how how global temperatures rising can displace climate events and weather events. And they can explain it like in a way that anyone who wants to listen can understand, in a way that these people are definitely capable of understanding. But because it's not convenient for them to grapple with their own culpability in a rapidly dying planet that they live on, they just make themselves dumber. They just go, well, then I'll just be dumber about that. I'll just pretend that my brain doesn't work when it comes to that issue. I'll just be a lot dumber on that. Same thing with gender. It's too complex to try to wrap your brain around the entirety of the human experience. Whoever you are, I don't care where you were raised. I don't care if you were raised in bumfuck Mississippi. In the backwoods, in the swamp, you have met someone who goes outside of the expected performance of their gender. Like you have met, you were raised around gender diverse people. Everyone was. Every single person. The universal experience, regardless of how in-depth your understanding of basic human biology is or isn't, your universal experience is going to be that most of the people you've ever met in your life seem to fall comfortably into most of the descriptors aligned with their gender and their societally expected gender performance. So, like, men do this list of expectations and perform this list of expected traits, and most of the men you've ever met seem to check off most of those, maybe not all of them, pretty much never all of them, but most of them, and most of the women also. Most of the women, they have these lists of societal expectations and performed attributes and behaviors, and most of the women you've ever met check off most of those and seem to fall comfortably in there. But you have experienced these people who don't check off any of them, who it just doesn't fit, or people who just check off like a couple of them, but nowhere near most of them. And they're being told, well, you're still expected to fulfill the societal performance of man or woman. And they're like, but that doesn't really seem to fit. You have experienced these people. I know you have, because you've had a human experience. And if you've met people, then you've met these people, regardless of whether or not you're aware that there are more than two chromosomal orientations, regardless of whether or not you're aware that there are more than two anatomical orientations, you are aware that there are more than two kinds of people. You are aware that people don't just come in this or that, that people come in all different kinds of alignments and persuasions and personalities and behaviors and types and styles and idiosyncrasies. You've seen it. You've seen the diversity and the plurality of human beings. You've experienced it, and you are willfully diluting your own knowledge of that experience to force yourself into this rigid ideology of A or B, man or woman. You are being willfully ignorant of the reality that you are experiencing, and you are a dangerous person. if you are that kind of person. If you are a person who is willing to pretend not to see something that you can definitely see for your own self-preservation, then you're not safe. And people need to watch out for you. And you need to knock that shit off. Now we're getting into the real baddies, the real scum, like I really don't like the willfully ignorant people. There's some really bad people in the willfully ignorant camp. The only thing we can maybe give them is like they do seem pretty good at making themselves stupid. They do seem pretty good at just like not absorbing any information that would change them from being ignorant to knowledgeable. So you can at least go like, well, they're just stupid. They don't know any better. They might be willfully stupid, but they're still stupid. And you can at least take some modicum of pity on them for that. This next group of people are the ones you really got to watch out for. The first of the final category is the people who fully understand what is happening and they are out loud owning it and cheering for it and are happy about it. So these are people who absolutely understand that what happened on the stage at the inauguration was an unambiguous Sieg Heil Nazi salute, and they are themselves open, loud, and proud Nazis. So you might think, why is this not the most dangerous group? Well, there's a reason why it's not the most dangerous group. It's because we can see them. It's because they allow themselves to be known. So this is the Nick Fuenteses of the world. This is how we know for certain that what happened on Monday is what it is. We know because we saw it and we know what it looks like and we know how to trust our own eyes. But we also know because this group, the out loud and proud actual Nazis of the world who are happy to call themselves Nazis, are saying, that is what you think it was. We're excited about it. Na 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 boo boo, you lost. We're here and run for the hills because we're coming. Nick Fuentes is one of these. Popular right-wing personality Nick Fuentes. He was beside himself with joy on his shitty podcast about this. He said, and I quote, direct quote here, it wasn't even a subtle like a wave. That was a straight up like Sieg Heil, like loving Hitler energy. That was like a straight up with intensity Roman salute. Nick Fuentes, you gotta watch the clip. He's laughing. He's like, he's just going like, oh, it was so awesome. He did it. He did the full on and it wasn't subtle at all. He really let them know about it. So like real life Nazis disagree with you if you're one of the people who's like, I don't know if that's what it was. The Nazis disagree with you. They're like, no, that's what it was. Germany disagree. The entire country of Germany disagrees with you. What he did, that's that gesture that he did, it's illegal in Germany. You can't do it in Germany. A lot of people have been saying and sharing videos of people who have been saying, if there's nothing wrong with that gesture, if it's totally harmless, if it's totally innocent, then do it. Film yourself doing it. And that's what I mean, simple challenge. If you're one of the willfully ignorant people, if you're one of the people who's sane washing what happened, if you fall into that camp, then film yourself doing the gesture. Put it on the internet and say, I don't know, this is me doing it, and I think there's nothing wrong with this. Just, you know what? Don't even film yourself. Do it in the mirror. Look at yourself doing it in the mirror and just see if you have some kind of visceral reaction. That's the part of you that you've shoved down into the sunken place trying to get out and tell you that you're wrong, that it is what it is. The straight up Nazis, the out loud and proud ones, and then the most dangerous group of people who are capable of goodness, people who have the capability of inherent goodness in them, people who have those seeds of goodness. The people in all, I want to say in all of these groups exist people who are capable of picking up a lost wallet and returning it to its owner. In all of these groups are people who are capable of donating to a righteous cause and giving money to help people, who are capable of showing up to a volunteer center and doing some volunteer work. They're all in these groups. But this last group is the one you really got to look out for. These are the most dangerous people. And these are the covert participators. These are the people who are fully aware of what is happening, are fully aware of the revitalization and rejuvenation and rebirth of the Nazi movement in America, are fully aware that that is where we are at and that is what happened on that stage, and are pretending like they're not. These are double agents. These people are scary. These are the ones where you don't know if they're in the first two categories or not. they're definitely denying that it was what it was. They're definitely saying, oh, no, that wasn't, I don't think that was a Sikh Heil salute. But you don't know if they're sane washing or making themselves willfully ignorant, or if they are full-blown Nazis and they're pretending not to be. And that's what makes them the most scary. And that's precisely why Aldo the Apache, played brilliantly by Brad Pitt in Inglourious Bastards, insisted on carving swastikas into Nazis' foreheads. Because here's the thing about modern Nazis, is they're fucking cowards. I've really been, you know, paying attention to this and seeing this for years now, how far-right comment trolls, the people who show up and say the nastiest things in comments, the most unhinged, vile bigotry, almost always are people with usernames that are not their real name. It's just some, like, you know, it's just some throwaway username like Bill Dingleberry 1488, you know, and then they don't have a profile picture, or if they do have a profile picture, it's of some right-wing racist meme like a Pepe the Frog, or, you know, some right-wing Nazi dog whistle profile picture, and their profiles are always private. Now, it's really easy to dismiss these people as bots. People are just like, ah, they're all bots. But I think that's letting them off the hook. I think that a lot of these are actual real people who are just fucking cowards, who are just terrified of being found out. They're real live actual Nazis who believe real life actual Nazi shit, but they know, some part of them is aware that they can't afford to wear that proudly, and so they hide like cowards. They see people like Nick Fuentes who wear it proudly. They see people like Elon Musk who basically is out loud and proud about it, but they themselves prefer to cower and hide. And this is the majority of these people. Like, most of them are little fucking scared baby wimps who aren't brave enough to just say it with their chest, to just be a bad guy, to just be a villain with their chest. And they're fucking pathetic, and they're also the most dangerous people that are out there when it comes to propping up this movement. Because when you encounter them, when you actually encounter them in the real world, there's no way to know which camp they're falling into, which box to put them in. And so they become this wild card. They become this really, really dangerous and effective tool for the proliferation of right-wing propaganda and the message and the proliferation of hate speech and bigotry. And yeah, they're the worst. Fuck them. They're terrible. So how does all of this happen? This is the part of the podcast where we got to talk about the banality of evil. Really, what I mean when I get into the banality of evil is sort of, what does this look like? What is this? How do you experience this when you're out in the world? How are you experiencing this change from a democracy with a right and left side and parties that are ideologically opposed but who still respect each other to a country that has been overtaken by right-wing authoritarianism and fascism and outright Nazism? How is this experience? What does it look like in real time? Well, we've gotten an up close and personal front row ticket to that over the last 10 years in the Trump era of American politics. It is no longer just something that you read about in the history books. This is exactly what it looks like. The phrase, the banality of evil, was first introduced and popularized by philosopher and political thinker Hannah Arendt in her book, Eichmann in Jerusalem, A Report on the Banality of Evil. This was a book about the trial of Adolf Eichmann, who was being tried for his crimes against humanity in the Holocaust. Hannah Arendt basically just remarked in her report on this trial about the nature of this guy, that he did not seem to be a malevolent or malicious or evil person. He did not seem to have malice in his heart toward the people who he had committed crimes against or toward the people who were trying him for those crimes. He did not seem to have hatred or be a bigot. He seemed to be a smart person, a learned person, a well-read, well-spoken person, a self-possessed person, a person who was self-actualized and understood who he was and understood the meaning and the gravity of his actions. And basically what it boiled down to for him was, he was just doing his job. He was just trying to perform his role in the society that he found himself in. It was self-preservation. It was day-to-day trying to get by. It had nothing to do with hate, or it was just, you know, survival. It was just the often rough game of surviving in the wild and making it out there in the rough world. I mean, the history of humanity is brutal, dude. Survival's a brutal game. You watch Planet Earth and you watch what it's like in the animal kingdom, in the jungle, it's a brutal game. It's kill or be killed. It's, you know, avoid getting eaten and then eat something smaller than you. And for most of the people who experienced the rise of the Third Reich in Germany, it was not just this time where all of a sudden there was this dark shroud that came over their community and their society, and everywhere everyone went, they could feel this cold, chilling, ominous, dark shadow that had fallen over everyone. It was actually a time of great prosperity for a lot of people in the country. Obviously not for certain people, but for white affluent people, they were experiencing kind of an economic rebirth. A movie that shows this really well is Jojo Rabbit. It's one of the most colorful, color palette-wise, Holocaust movies and movies about Nazism in Germany that I've ever seen. And I think that it really shows why people had this kind of surge of patriotism and nationalism at that time in Germany, and why they were supporting the far-right authoritarian politics of Adolf Hitler. It was because, to their eyes, it seemed to be working. The price of eggs was going down. The price of gas was going down. The average working man was finally catching a break, and things were working out, and we were getting rid of all these foreigners and all of these others that we could pin all of our problems on. And if you were a person who was unfortunate enough to be queer or trans or not white or Jewish in Germany, what you were witnessing was people that you went to school with, Hans down the street, you know, with the butcher shop, your next door neighbors, slowly but surely falling in with ideas that were, no exaggeration, no hyperbole, dangerous to your existence, a threat to your very life and your very survival. But they were doing it with all the banality of someone just saying, "Hey, neighbor, how you doing? Boy, it sure is great that we're cleaning up all the riffraff, isn't it, neighbor?" Just people, you know, just simply you're at a dinner party and people are talking about the surging economy and how well the market's doing. And you try to say, "Well, that was kind of a weird thing that Hitler said on TV the other day, right? Wasn't it?" And all of a sudden the entire dinner party looks at you and goes, "I don't think so. I think that you might be, you might be reading some weird things. It seemed pretty normal to me." It's incredibly, people are going to behave like people, you know? Serial killers are human beings who, for the most part, behave like people. Most of their lives are spent going to the store, interacting with people, having normal, you know, just hanging out, just living normal lives. Evil is a human phenomenon, and it is banal and commonplace and ordinary. It doesn't appear the way that you expect it to appear by if you're just leaning on what you've learned from books and movies. It's your friends. It's often your family members. It's, you know, you're talking to someone that you've agreed with on most things for most of your life, and all of a sudden one day you realize, oh no, this person is excusing something that I'm not sure I can actually be okay with anymore. You know, it's like, I mean, my whole life I've been friends with people, and I've had people in my family and people very close to me who I disagree with ideologically. My whole life, I was raised in a very conservative area in Sandy, Utah, heavily LDS and Mormon and conservative community growing up. And I've always been at odds with people in my community. Even when I was a part of the community, I was always pushing back on things and asking questions about things. I'm very good at maintaining relationships with people who I have ideological differences on. I'm very good at maintaining solid relationships, productive relationships, healthy relationships with people who I have different opinions from. What happens when your country devolves into this kind of fascism is you start to see the boundaries of what you can tolerate in terms of having ideological differences. When you start to see people excusing what happened on the stage at the presidential inauguration, when you start to see people excusing what's happening with these executive orders, you start to realize, oh, there's a limit to where I can have, you know, tolerance with people. And that brings me to the final part of this episode, which is, what can we do? So It's been a very bleak conversation. I understand that. Thank you for sticking with us. If you have so far, you're probably wondering, cool, you said all of this really, really bleak, depressing shit. I listened to all of it. You filled my brain with all of this terrifying information. Thanks a lot. What can I do about it, dude? You're just talking about a bunch of shit that's outside of my control. Why are you doing that? Why are you being such a downer? What do you want me to do about it? So let's actually try to have a conversation about it. Let's see if we can have a productive conversation about what can we do now that we know this is where we are. Well, the very first thing, and this is very important, this is tantamount to our survival, this is tantamount to our ability to progress and move forward and strategize. Do not deny the evidence of your eyes and ears. We have to be on the same page about what we are seeing and what we are hearing. If we cannot start from that point, then we cannot trust each other to move forward and strategize about the things that we need to strategize about. If we cannot be on the same page about what we are looking at, then we are in two different camps. We have to, the people that you cannot be on the same page about with that stuff have to be placed into a category now of, that is no longer a safe person to strategize with. That is no longer a safe person to be as open as you would normally like to be with. You need to now start delineating those people, and it's going to be tough because there's going to be people who are close to you. And those are lines in the sand that you're going to have to start drawing of like, okay, if we cannot start out on the same basic page of agreeing what a Sieg Heil salute looks like, then we cannot move forward and continue to talk about strategy. So that is the first place, is like, we all need to be willing to call it what it was. And not just with that, not just with the salute, but with all of it. Every time you hear someone close to you, every time you hear a friend or a family member trying to sane wash or dismiss some crazy thing, some crazy new executive order, make sure you push back on it. You don't need to do it with vitriol. You can do it with love and with patience and with serenity and with a level head, with rationality. Think about that bishop that talked to Donald Trump in her church at the inauguration, you know, said right to his face, I think this person is an absolute hero. I think this person is the pinnacle of courage. Looked at him and with the most calm, serene, loving, compassionate voice said, please, sir, I'm begging you to have mercy on the people in this country who are scared right now. Please take mercy on gay and queer and trans and, you know, lesbian and bisexual kids who are the children of Republicans and Democrats and independents. Please take mercy on these people. Please take mercy on the migrants who are workers in our country, who are a vital part of our country, who are terrified right now of having their families torn apart. Please take mercy on them. So you can say this as calmly as you want, but when you hear someone trying to hand wave away something like that, I think you need to be willing to speak up and say, no, that's not correct. What he just said means this, actually. What that actually is this, and that's what it is. And we need to be willing to speak truth as often and as regularly and as calmly or loudly or in whatever tone you want, but just speak truth directly to whoever you can, whenever you can, and do not deny what is happening. Do not allow yourself to self-delude, to lean into willful ignorance. Do not allow yourself to be gaslit by people who tell you that you're overreacting or that you're not acting level-headed or that you're really flying off the handle. Don't allow yourself to fall into psychological self-preservation traps. Stay vigilant, stay aware, and continue to accept the evidence of your eyes and ears. That's first. We need to start from there. The next step is, do not ever, and this kind of goes hand in hand with the first one, do not ever downplay or trivialize the concerns of your friends or loved ones. If that's happening right now, if you're seeing what's happening, but you have maybe some people who are reacting bigger than you are, and you're thinking, okay, I see it too, but let's calm down. Don't do that. Don't downplay, don't trivialize. Everyone's reaction right now is appropriate. Okay, the people who are reacting and saying, this is bad, this is very serious, are reacting appropriately. Just because someone's voice might be raised or their temperature might be up, their pulse might be a little hotter, doesn't mean they've lost the plot. Doesn't mean that they're off their rocker. Doesn't mean that they need to be on stronger medication. Doesn't mean they need to be in therapy or see a psychiatrist. They are responding to something drastic in a drastic way. They're responding to an incredibly charged, incredibly scary, incredibly real thing in a normal and human and understandable way. So hold space for that. Do your best to make sure that you're being a human right now and leading with empathy and compassion for the people who are responding appropriately to this in your life. If you think that people are overreacting, it's possibly because you are underreacting. And the reason why you are doing that is most likely in an effort to protect your own peace. You're trying to just, you know, it's again, it's all psychological self-preservation. Like, it's a very scary thing to take on. It's a very uncomfortable, inconvenient reality to grapple with. So in an effort to protect your own peace, you're trying to downplay what's happening. Do not downplay what's happening to protect your own peace, which brings me to my next step, which is protect your own peace however you can outside of doing that. We're going to need healthy, well-fed, well-slept, well-rested people on the front lines of this fight right now. We need you at your best. We need you in peak physical and mental form as much as you possibly can be. So whenever possible, take a break. Get offline. You know, stop scrolling, stop reading, stop responding in the comments. If you've said your piece and you've spoken your truth, you can walk away. You can leave it at that. You don't need to debate with people. Well, I think we're past that. In 2025, I really think we're past going point for point with Nazis about why being a Nazi is bad. You don't need to host the debate. They're going to try to bait you with all kinds of things. They're going to tell you that you're too afraid to have the conversation, that you're being intolerant, that you're, hurling insults when you call them what they are, and that you're losing the argument because you're resorting to ad hominem or whatever it is. I've been taking on the tactic of just telling them to eat shit. I've spent 5 years of my life trying to be an educator and hold people by the hand and try to be as level-headed and as calm as I can, and now I'm just telling people to eat shit. I say my piece, I say what's true, I say what is actual, I say what is honest, and when they respond, if they feel some type of way about it and they want to have a conversation, they want to have a debate, they want to dissent or disagree, I tell them they can eat shit. And that's where I'm at. You don't need to be where I'm at. You don't need to tell people they need to eat shit. But that's how I'm protecting my peace right now, is I'm not engaging with whatever debate they're trying to pull me into. I'm not acting as their teacher. And I'm not, debasing myself to pretend like they're actually going to be open to learning the lesson if I do try to do those things. And, there's multiple ways that you can preserve your peace right now. I'm also making sure that I make plenty of time for my friends, for the people who are the most important in my life, for the people who I love, that I'm trying to arrive to those people with a softness and a kindness and trying to be open to joy. It's still okay to experience and be open to joy right now. You need to give yourself permission for that. It absolutely is okay to experience joy, to laugh, to smile, to watch funny shows, to do fun things and fun activities. Yeah, so like, Eat good food and make sure you're getting good rest and go to therapy if you can afford it. If you're lucky enough and privileged enough to have that, lean on community if you've got good community. Go find community activities that you can get in the middle of and find ways to be selfless and find ways to be of service. Make sure you're taking care of yourself, filling your own canteen, all of that good stuff, making sure your own life preserver is on before you try to help other people. So definitely, protect your own peace. The next one is we need you, healthy and protect, healthy and, at the top of your game, because we also need you right now to grow a spine. If you're a person who's mostly stayed out of the conversation up till now, if you've kind of hung back on the back lines and thought, I don't really have much to say, I don't really get involved, right now, more than any other time in our country's history, we need you to grow a spine and get involved. And that's going to be inconvenient and uncomfortable for a lot of you. It's going to be really, really hard. It's going to mean confronting people who you care about, people who are close to you. It's going to mean getting into the fray. We need you being bold about what is real and what is honest and what is true. And we need to be loud and proud about the truth and about advocating for the people who are going to be the most vulnerable right now. So we need you in there. And we need you kind of like willing to lose friends over this. We need you to be willing to offend, willing to upset people. The situation, unfortunately, calls for it. Again, this goes back to me being a philosophical realist. Like, I wish I could just be a person who's a, just try to be nice no matter what. And if you disagree with someone, just leave it at that. We're no longer there. In a philosophical reality of the situation, we are in a situation that calls for needing to draw some lines in the sand of, hey, this is a boundary that if you are going to cross, we can't be on good terms. And you need to kind of be willing to draw those lines right now. And this takes us to the paradox of tolerance, because you might be thinking, what a terribly intolerant and violent thing Austin is suggesting. Like, you're talking about, like, I've seen people say this, that they'll go like, you know, someone in my comments will say something like, yeah, I had to block my brother because my brother is supporting Nazis and I can't allow that. And then some conservative will go, if you're blocking family members over this, that is so toxic and you are not well. And this is a, you know, a very common kind of diminishing and gaslighting technique that conservatives use when they see people on the left and progressives trying to establish firm emotional boundaries on things like this and trying to have a spine and have some integrity behind what they do and what they mean and what they believe. Is they'll say like, aren't you guys supposed to be tolerant? Aren't you guys supposed to be the philosophy and the ideology of love and acceptance? Everything about you seems so vitriolic and full of venom and toxic. And here's the thing is like, I'm not going to say that I can't be a rude, mean, snarky motherfucker from time to time. I absolutely can. I definitely, over the last 48 hours on social media, was an absolute menace. Like I said, I went on a tear telling people to eat shit, all kinds of shit, mountains of shit, entire truckloads of human shit. I'm a mean guy from time to time when it comes to this stuff, and I'm not the nicest, most level-headed person always. And I'm not necessarily proud of that either. Like, I'd like to be able to approach it with a more level head and nicer. But this takes us to the concept of the paradox of tolerance, right? Like, the problem with being a tolerant person who seeks to be tolerant of all different kinds of people, of all different kinds of persuasions, all different ideologies, all different walks of life, races, ethnicities, credos, you know, idiosyncratic personalities. The problem with trying to be a tolerant and accepting and loving person is, in order to do that, there does have to be boundaries around what you can and cannot tolerate. And one of the things that you cannot tolerate, if you're going to be a tolerant person who pushes the agenda of love and acceptance and tolerance, is you cannot tolerate intolerance and bigotry and hate. And it's a paradox because those two things are at odds with each other. That's inconvenient truths and uncomfortable truths. This is one of them, is having to hold space for a paradox like this, that in order to be an agent of tolerance and peace and love and understanding and acceptance, I also have to be an enemy of people who are promoting intolerance and hatred and bigotry. I have to hold firm boundaries against that stuff. I have to call that stuff out when I see it. I have to call it what it is and be honest about it. And I have to be firm in my insistence that those people adjust their behavior or get out of my life and get out of my way. And that's unfortunately where we're at now. We've been there for a while. Like, there's a lot of things that you should just not be tolerant of. There's a lot of, like, you just shouldn't be tolerant of racism. You shouldn't be tolerant of queerphobia of any kind. You shouldn't be tolerant of misogyny. You shouldn't be tolerant of ableism. You shouldn't be tolerant of a lot of different kinds of bigotry in a lot of different forms and a lot of different forms of social inequality and social injustice. But right now, more than ever, you've really got to have a hard, firm boundary on some of this stuff that you are firmly opposing what this administration stands for, what it believes in, what its supporters stand for and believe in. And that brings us to kind of my last two things, which is be ready for anything and discuss exit strategies and forward moving strategies, if it comes to that, with the people closest to you. This is another inconvenient and uncomfortable truth of where we're at, is there's no guarantee, and I mean this seriously, this is not a hyperbolic thing that I'm saying right now, there's no guarantee that this country will be a safe place to be in a couple years' time, and we need to get real about that. We need to be honest about what that means, and we need to be ready for any contingencies, any potential developments and realities, and have exit strategies and plans in place, and talk to those closest to you about that. Be open about it and pragmatic about it. Until that happens, I'll be here doing what I do. I'm going to be doing what I can for as long as I can. And if the time comes, I'll do what I have to do to get to safety. And that's kind of it from me right now, as far as like, what can we do in a broad sense? I hope that any of that was useful for you. We're now going to go to the portion of the show where I talk to the TikTok audience, the TikTok digital studio audience, the talkback. We're going to get their thoughts on the show and what they've been listening to. We got a really nice sized audience here. We've had about 200 to 240 people in the audience for the entire discussion. Really happy about that. If you are watching this on YouTube, you can watch this segment on Patreon. It's going to be a Patreon exclusive segment, the feedback from the audience, and you can watch the full episode, the full unedited episode there on my Patreon if you'd like to. I'll be linking that in the description. But here we go. Here is the portion that you'll be seeing if you're watching it on my Patreon or if you're in the live stream on TikTok. That's it. That's going to do it. That's going to wrap it up. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com, linked in the description of this video. Support indie music. That's a great way to resist fascists, right? Support indie art. Speaking of supporting indie art, patreon.com/austinarcher. Hey, Patreon patrons. Did you know that I love you? Do you know that you're actually the coolest people in the world? Sorry, everybody else. They're the coolest people in the world. And I understand that if you just don't have the means to support and it doesn't make sense for you to support, you can't do it. And I totally respect that and totally think that's completely valid. But if you have the means and you would like to support this work going forward, if you would like to make sure that channels like this can continue doing work like this and having conversations like this, consider joining me over at patreon.com/AustinArcher. There's lots of bonus content and from all of my videos over there. Lots of good perks to being a member over there. Hope to see you over there. And yeah, that's it for now. It's a wild world out there. It's a bleak world. It's a glum world. Take care of yourselves out there. Take care of each other. Be kind, okay? As kind as you can in an unkind, unsane world. We'll see you next time. Love you so much. Bye-bye.